WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Vice President Kamala Harris and former Congresswoman Liz Cheney appearing at a town hall today in Chester, Pennsylvania. Cheney?
Every one of us in this election has a duty and an obligation to do what we know is right for the country, and that's to support Vice President Harris.
Cheney, a Republican, has endorsed Harris. A death row inmate whose execution was suspended at the 11th hour last week did not testify at a Texas State House hearing looking into his case today over concerns of transporting him from prison. Robert Robertson says he did not shake his two-year-old daughter to death in 2002. Also in Texas, a helicopter crashing into a radio tower last night before crashing down into a Houston neighborhood. Four people killed, including a child. No one on the ground hurt. The White House says the Defense Department is investigating the disclosure of classified documents regarding a planned retaliatory Israeli attack on Iran. Wall Street, the Dow is down 369 points. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris returns to Wisconsin today. She'll make an appearance with former Congresswoman Liz Cheney in Waukesha County. That's where Republican running mate J.D. Vance campaigned last night. In-person early voting starts in Wisconsin tomorrow.
We want people to vote in every single way that they can. We want every vote to count. We want get out there and vote. Vote by mail, vote absentee, vote early, vote on Election Day.
Democratic running mate Tim Walz and former President Barack Obama will be in Wisconsin tomorrow. Senator Tammy Baldwin and challenger Eric Hovde accused each other of dishonesty several times in their debate Friday night. Baldwin said more than a dozen independent fact-checkers found Hovde's made false campaign claims. Hovde accused all of Baldwin's campaign ads to be false, but offered no evidence. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. The Cloquet-Carlton County Airport has received $250,000 in federal funding to assist with infrastructure improvements. Senator Amy Klobuchar visited the airport last week to announce the new funding, which will be used for the construction of a new 11,000-square-foot hangar. Airport officials say there's already 25 people on the waiting list for hangar space at the airport, and the additional space will increase revenue and allow the airport to continue running for the foreseeable future. An inmate who had escaped from the St. Louis County Jail was taken back into custody on Friday. According to law enforcement authorities, inmate LaRon Brown was being seen for a medical visit at the Fairview Range Medical Center in Hibbing on Thursday when he fled from the guard who accompanied him. He was found on Friday morning after an extensive law enforcement search in the area and was taken back into custody with additional charges expected. He is currently serving a sentence for felony domestic assault. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers get the win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers beat the Texans 24-22 thanks to a walk-off field goal. Green Bay running back Josh Jacobs had a big day, rushing for 76 yards. He also got his first ever touchdown catch despite 212 career receptions.
You know, it was long overdue. You know, we talked about it all week at practice. It was like, man, this is the week that we're going to get you. We had like three or four plays in the red zone for me. So, man, you know, I appreciate my coaches and, you know, the teammates wanted me to get that, calling it for that situation, man, and it was fun, man. First Lambo Elite, well, official Lambo Elite, you know, it was a good one.
The Badgers beat Northwestern in Evanston 23-3. Wisconsin strength and conditioning coach Brady Collins challenged the players, saying he'd jump in Lake Michigan if they got the win.
He was going to go in the lake, whether they were going to throw him in the lake or he was going to jump in the lake. And about 3.5 minutes ago in the game, I looked back to one of the guys and said, make sure we find a path to get him to that lake. So it was a great celebration.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Another summery day today. Under sunny skies, high temperatures will soar to near 80 degrees. Winds are calmer out of the south, and a few clouds build in tonight as lows fall to the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, sun to start, clouds increasing, and showers rolling in by the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 76.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Earl Ingram.
On the next show, my Tuesday co-host Sandy Williams will be here to catch up on all politics we missed over the weekend. You won't want to miss it.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 till 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? Happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The string of summer-like weather continues. I'm not complaining. I'm enjoying it. Absolutely gorgeous. Did a long walk with my dog yesterday all around the lakefront. Just amazing. And of course, I was hanging out because it was my mom's birthday. So happy birthday to Shirley. She's out there listening, no doubt. Good fun, that. Hope you all had a really good weekend. We got a great show planned for you today. Remember, you can always watch the shows live on YouTube, which is a bunch of fun. Again, I do not have a poker face. Not a thing for me. So if you want to see my hair on fire facial expressions, you can always watch the show on YouTube. We also stream on Facebook and Instagram. You can find our YouTube channel is Civic Media on YouTube, and you can check the show out on all of the socials, Insta, Facebook, and X, at Maggie Dawn Show. So please do that. I like a little participation, a little feedback. That's always fun. And then today we've got a whole array of fabulous guests. On Mondays at 2:30, I am joined by the Center for American Progress's Action Fund. Today, we've got a guest joining us. His name is Michael Sozon, and he really focuses on democracy and the institutions of our government. He's going to join us today. That will be an interesting discussion, certainly as Donald Trump's rhetoric continues to amp up. As we are now, let's see, got to check my president election countdown clock. 14 days, 10 hours, 51 minutes, and now 23 seconds away from official balloting. At 3 o'clock, of course, we got Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. We're going to be joined by George Gala. He is the founder of a nonprofit called Addition, which is a worker advocacy organization. So looking forward to talking with George. And of course, because it's Monday and it is time for In Case You Missed It with Dom Salvia, he's going to join me at 3:30. So all of that looking to be a lot of fun this afternoon. Calvin, my friend, is joining me on the boards. Calvin, part of the Maggie Dawn production team. Thanks so much, Cal. Always appreciate your work. How was your weekend, my friend?
It was pretty good. I actually had off on Thursday and Friday with the studio move. Excellent. So had, yes, a long weekend, and I'm doing well.
Well, I am certainly glad to have you. And yes, folks, if you didn't know, We've been doing a little rearranging of the furniture, if you will, here at Civic Media. All of the political talkers now, except for Todd Albo, who continues to broadcast from Madison and Richland Center, all of the rest of us, we now are joining our Racine neighbors at the WRJN station to do our talk broadcast. So that's exciting. Always fun to just get a mind reset in a new physical space. I enjoy that. Certainly looking forward to all this good stuff, all the newness here at WRJN. We love our downtown Waukesha location, though you can usually find one of us hanging out at the farmers markets in downtown Waukesha on Saturdays. But folks, here's where I wanted to start today. I read this article. Let's see. I believe I read it on Friday, and it really got under my skin big time. And it was a piece, a guest opinion piece written for the New York Times by a guy by the name of Neil Katyal. Now, if you're a real political junkie, you may hear his name and think this sounds familiar. Neil Katyal is currently a professor of law at Georgetown University, but he worked for many years in the Solicitor General's office. And this guy is really, really smart. And so when I saw this opinion piece and that it was written by him, I thought, I've got to read that. And the title pretty much tells you what it's all about. The line is this, the headline is this: in case of an election crisis, this is what you need to know. And having been the person that was the lead legal advisor to the Milwaukee County Elections Commission during the 2020 recount, I was fascinated because I think a lot of the tactics that were deployed by the Trump campaign in 2020 to basically throw out valid votes and then slow down the votes so that deadlines that were enshrined in state law would be blown, therefore throwing the slate of electors into question. We're seeing a lot of indications that similar tactics will be and are being used in this election cycle. So I jumped in. Now, I'm going to share with you the observations made by Attorney Katyal, but I also highly recommend that you go read it. So we're going to put the link to the article in the show chat today. And Calvin, I'll send that to you before we're done this afternoon. But I want to take us all through it because the portrait that it paints is so deeply terrifying. And the clarity with which Neil shares these threats, these concerns that he has, is remarkable. I think a lot of lawyers, we over-wordsmith things. You know what I'm saying, Cal? A little bit over-talk the point a little bit. And I do say that with a bit of irony that of course, here I am talking with each and every one of you. But let's jump into Neil's article here. Again, this is the New York Times, published on October 16th. The title is, in case of an election crisis, this is what you need to know. And he starts with this observation. In 2020, when the Trump campaign questioned the results of the election and when Donald Trump started to spread the big lie, the courts nearly universally, in all but just a small handful of cases where the victories for on the side of the Trump campaign were very de minimis, non-substantive, had no ultimate impact on the election. The courts just rejected case after case after case after case. There were, I think, we had a state law-based case that went up to our state Supreme Court here in the state of Wisconsin. We also had one in federal court, numerous claims. All of them, Donald Trump lost. But in 2024, Neil starts out by pointing out the fact that we should not be looking to the judiciary alone to save democracy. That if you're thinking about, well, maybe I'm going to sit this one out. Maybe I'm going to do the old third party conscientious objector vote, or I'm not going to vote at all because you think, oh, of course, the law, the judicial branch, that'll save us. That'll sort it all out. Neil's pointing out here, for a number of reasons, that is not going to be the case. And the first warning that he notes, and I've said this a number of times, is that they are no longer amateurs. Those that seek to disenfranchise voters from the Republican side of the political spectrum aren't amateurs about how to do this, how to attempt to basically tell voters that your votes don't count anymore, that, you know, the state legislature will just decide for whom our state's electors will be cast. Or, hey, just judges, they'll decide for whom the state's electors should, their votes should be cast. And this is quite scary. Here's what Neil Katyal writes. Again, this is from October 16th. He writes this, quote, "The rogues are no longer amateurs. They have spent the last 4 years going pro, meticulously devising a strategy across multiple fronts, state legislatures, Congress, executive branches, and elected judges to overturn any close election." And that is indeed the point. We know that this is happening already because right now, coast to coast, there are upwards of 100 plus lawsuits. Some put the number north of 200, but there is just an incredible volume of litigation that is already occurring in the courts. For example, in Pennsylvania, there's litigation over whether undated mail-in ballots are permissible. Why wouldn't they be? I mean, if you have the ballot before, you know, the count is done, why wouldn't you count that? Well, again, Republicans trying to tamp down likely Democratic votes in Pennsylvania by bringing this case. Case in Pennsylvania also separately about whether provisional ballots can be allowed. Wow. Stephen Miller, a Trump campaign advisor, you know, the guy that looks like the Walking Dead, the crafter of the family separation policy under the Trump administration. Yeah, that guy, he's brought suit in Arizona claiming that judges should just be able to throw out election results. And all of this litigation is in part occurring as part of a deliberate and intentional strategy to disenfranchise voters or to place the outcome of the election in the hands of someone other than a state's voters, namely a legislature or a friendly judge. But here's why there's so much more legislation litigation than we've seen in past years. And it's because in many states and local counties, in response to Donald Trump's continuous avalanche of lies and frankly, his apologist lies about the 2020 election, a lot of states and a lot of local counties changed their voting laws. They changed the very process of how they conduct voting. And what's important about that is when you change the law, well, that's now a new law. And it can be subject to all kinds of legal challenges and interpretive difficulties. And some of these laws are affirmatively vague and basically invent chaos. All of this not good. We're going to continue this discussion about what former Solicitor General, current Georgetown Law Professor Neil Katyal says we can likely expect some level of election shenanigans from Trump and his co-conspirators following November 5th this year. So keep it locked. Of course, we got the Center for American Progress coming in at 2:30. We're going to talk more about democracy then. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Kamala Harris gets that everyday costs are too high. She has real plans to tackle price gouging, cut taxes for middle-class families, and make life more affordable. Her opponent's plan?
Donald Trump plans to impose what is, in effect, a national sales tax. On everyday products, it will mean higher prices on just about every one of your daily needs. a Trump tax on gas, a Trump tax on food, a Trump tax on clothing, a Trump tax on over-the-counter medication. Donald Trump's plan would cost a typical family $3,900 a year. When everyday prices are too high, he will make them even higher.
Kamala Harris, a better plan for lowering costs for a future we can afford. Paid for by FFPAC, FFPAC.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. FFPAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio. Your news just for the Amory area. I'm James Kelly with WLAK News.
The Dom Salvia Show.
And I heard the scientists say the other day that when a man votes for a woman, he actually transitions into a woman.
What Jesse happens Waters. When a woman votes for a man?
Turns into a man.
Well, that's okay, though.
That's fine.
Yeah, because then she gets control of her body.
Oh.
I see what I did there?
Yeah.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
The first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of, like, why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking about an article, an opinion piece by Neil Katyal. It was published in the New York Times just last week. The reason that we're talking about it is because it scared the bejiggers out of me. He's basically contrasting where we were in 2020 to where we are today in terms of the potential for an electoral crisis. In other words, so much doubt or suspicion thrown into the actual presidential election process that we could be faced with a constitutional crisis. Now, Neil Katyal, particularly well suited to be the guy that talks to us about all of this, former Solicitor General, professor of law at Georgetown University Law School, he's argued before the Supreme Court, I think somewhere north of 80 times. So yeah, the guy knows what he is talking about. And we left off where I was sharing with you that there are already 100 plus lawsuits going through the courts, both at the state and federal level. And of course, you know, in the past, and certainly the recount cases from 2020 that occurred in the state of Wisconsin, a Trump judge, a Trump-appointed judge, heard those cases and rejected the claims. And I have a lot of faith in the federal judiciary. But there are 1,200 federal court judges. And now, generally speaking, federal court judges are supposed to be more independent because under Article 3 of the Constitution, they're appointed for a lifetime. So the thinking was always, well, these would be less political judges. Well, our experience would tell us that that is not universally true. So we know that some of these cases are going to be proceeding in the federal courts. We know Donald Trump stacked the courts. And so all it takes is maybe one or two federal judges out of the 1,200 of them who maybe put politics above principle, right? Or personal ambition above the good of the country and act in a political way and plunge us all into some sort of deep electoral confusion. And of course, there's the old Supreme Court. Not really a confidence-inspiring group of people these days, are they? And that's just category number one of the problem. So I'm going to just put it the lawsuit bundle of problems with the judges trouble. And I don't even need to get into state level judges because in many states, they are very, very partisan. So then we look at category two that Professor Katyal pointed out, and he talks about state official and local election boards. Like, for example, we got the Wisconsin Election Commission here in the state. Each county has an election commission. And he points out that these state officials and local election boards can also create all kinds of chaos simply by refusing to certify elections if that's their role. And of course, this time around, because of the changes in state laws, especially in deep red states, that have made elections easier to challenge, have thrown, I think, a lot of issues into gray area that invite this sort of chaos, they've got more justifications for perhaps, you know, throwing out the will of the voters and letting someone else decide. A good example of this is that new election law in Georgia that empowers local election boards to investigate voter fraud. It doesn't really require any sort of standard of proof to begin such an investigation. It just says that they can do this. Now, that sounds maybe like a good thing, but what does that really mean? It means that a local election board can potentially say, oh, well, we think there's voter fraud, so maybe we won't certify the votes. Now, again, there's litigation going on in Georgia about this. There's been some favorable rulings, but all of it is problematic, especially taken as a whole. Now, in 2022, Congress passed the Election Count Reform and Presidential Transition Improvement Act, which tried to clean up some of these problems. But again, at the end of the day, you have people in these public roles, public officials, that have to choose to do the right thing. At the end of the day, that is what much of this relies on. Of course, third is a category of problem that we know lots about here in the state of Wisconsin, and it's those partisan state legislatures. Wisconsin's gerrymandered beyond all recognition. And legislatures that are gerrymandered and deeply red may have some incentives to muck about with the certification if they have a role in that, or to maybe give some airtime to totally stupid, baseless conspiracy theories about voter fraud. And then again, maybe try to interfere to get like a different, completely fictional slate of electors appointed and handed off to your Wisconsin Senator Johnson. And the worst thing is, if we end up in electoral vote tie for any number of these reasons, the House decides. Yikes. So this is not good. Again, Congress has tried to improve this with this 2022 law, but the rules are extremely complex. The new rules and procedures for the actual certification of the electors that happens in Congress, you know, the thing that led to January 6th. Again, the 2022 law, very complicated. Anytime you see this sort of complexity, you can end up in what? Litigation. There can be uncertainty. It's not been used before, all of these things. So when we take all of that together, here's what Neil Katyal writes. The stark reality is that there are no immediate solutions to a potential election crisis. The personnel to trigger one in the courts, the legislatures, and the executive branches of government are largely in place. And that is why an overwhelming victory in the presidential race and supporting congressional candidates that support democracy is absolutely essential on November 5th. Early voting starts in the state of Wisconsin tomorrow. Civic Media's got you covered. When we come back, I'll tell you about our election special, and we'll be joined by Michael Sozon, Senior Fellow for Democracy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll talk more about democracy after these brief messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin.
Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Last Thursday, the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association signed an alliance with OSHA to help create the safest possible working conditions in the dairy processing industry. I am Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Rebecca Sweeney, the Senior Director of Programs and Policy for the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association, explains that they are offering two training courses with the help of OSHA. We will hear more about that after this break.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and here's Rebecca Sweeney to talk about the two training courses that the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association partnered with OSHA to create.
So we've launched two new safety trainings with consultation from OSHA. One is basic safety training for dairy processors. That's a great program for anybody, whether they're day two in their job or they've been in for 20 years and they need some reminders. We're making sure that they know about all of the ways that they can keep themselves safe on the job. Our other class is to train our safety trainers to help them understand how adults learn this kind of information and what motivates them to every single day remain committed to the highest standard of safety.
Sweeney says that keeping their workers safe is the highest priority for the dairy processing industry. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at some ag news right after this.
There I was, driving along, when I saw the corn laying down in the field, goosenecked again. Even though I tried everything, new traits, existing soil insecticides, every corn grower knows the hassle of gooseneck corn. But now there's Narisma Insecticide from BASF, a better, stronger in-furrow insecticide that controls corn rootworm and below-ground pests. Stand up for your corn with Narisma Insecticide. Ask your authorized BASF retailer about Narisma, and always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and here's a look at some ag news for today. DACAP set out nearly 9,000 traps across 44 counties to catch spongy moths, and it was shown that this year approximately half as many moths were caught, which might be showing some signs of relief from the spongy moth. In other news, the Dairy Business Association will be celebrating their 25th anniversary at the 2025 Dairy Strong Conference. That conference is taking place in Green Bay from January 15th through the 16th. With a look at your agribusiness news from the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Another summery day today. Under sunny skies, high temperatures will soar to near 80 degrees. Winds are calmer out of the south, and a few clouds build in tonight as lows fall to the mid-50s. Then tomorrow, sun to start, clouds increasing, and showers rolling in by the afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 76.
When it comes to accurate, reliable election information for Wisconsin voters, visit the official site. It's myvote.wi.gov. It's the big cheese, you could say. It's your one-stop source for official Wisconsin election information. Find your polling place, see your sample ballot, make sure your registration is up to date, and more at myvote.wi.gov. Sponsored by Wisconsin Elections Commission, aired by Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Todd Alba Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, she is a candidate for State Senate District 18. Kristen Alfheim will be here. We'll wrap everything up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
I'm only happy when it rains. I'm only happy when it's complicated.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Tomorrow, early voting begins in Wisconsin, and Civic Media's got you covered. First, on my show, I'm going to go through all the mechanics, all of the logistical Q&As that you and your friends and family may have about how to vote. Is it better to drop my ballot off if I got an absentee ballot or mail it in? When should I mail it in by? What happens if my signature forget to put it on the mail-in ballot? All of these things and more. I will talk about it tomorrow in my show along with a couple of special guests. And then I'm joining our political editor, Dan Schaefer, for a special Know Your Vote show tomorrow night from 6 to 7 o'clock. I'll go through all of this again with Dan. So mark your calendars, get your pens and pencils ready. We'll dump all kinds of useful information on you so that you can make sure your vote counts in this once-in-a-generation election. Because democracy is at stake, and I'm so very happy to have my next special guest joining the Maggie Dawn Show today. His name is Michael Sozan. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He was formerly Chief of Staff to U.S. Senator Mark Udall, Legislative Director for Senator Jim Webb, Counsel for former Senator Bill Nelson. He's been an attorney for the DOJ and for the FCC. I'll call you next time, Mike, when I'm wondering if we're FCC compliant here on this station. Thanks so much for making time. Where do you rate this election on the things could go really badly if we reach the wrong outcome here meter?
Well, thanks for having me on, Maggie. There are a lot of concerns. I try to stay optimistic, but we know there's a track record here of Donald Trump and his and the MAGA movement. We know that there are lots of different parts of the system that can be exploited. I think luckily Congress acted in a bipartisan fashion recently when it updated the statute that oversees how the electoral counts are voted by Congress. That's what was being done last January 6th at the time of the insurrection. So it'll be a lot harder for that part to be disrupted. But there are still other parts that can be disrupted, especially in the states when they're moving towards certification of the votes in the states by the governors. And also, I'll just say, obviously, I think we're all troubled by the amount of disinformation floating around about elections and of the amount of political violence and threats of violence that are just becoming more commonplace. And the permission structure that unfortunately a lot of our political leaders give to Americans to engage in that sort of dangerous rhetoric.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard the words permission structure so many times as I have in the lead up to this election, both from what I'm going to call the scary end of that stick. And that is folks who used to be, you know, proudly of a party that supported law and order and stood for the rule of law, at least nominally speaking, finding their way to basically act in an extra legal, meaning illegal way to raise all kinds of bogus questions about the election process. In the last segment, just before you came on, Mike, we were talking about that 2022 law that Congress passed to help clarify and put some guardrails around the electoral count itself once it gets to Congress. But as I was discussing Professor Katyal's article with the audience today, you know, he points out and he leans on the very thing that you mentioned, the fact that there have been in mostly red-controlled or deep red states, changes made to the voting laws that operate the governance of elections within the states. And that every time, and he points this out in a really nonpartisan way, just any time you change laws, that then raises, okay, well, how is this interpreted? How is it applied? And that gives additional fodder. And you couple that with the reality that there have been explicit people that have run for local offices that both directly impact the processing of elections or indirectly could potentially do so, that have fully bought and are fully committed to the big lie, to these conspiracy theories. It's a challenging time. When we think about that for a state like Wisconsin, What should voters be looking at when they look at their congressional candidates that are running, when they're looking at who may be on their state ballots? Because Professor Katyal points to that as almost, if not more important than the presidential vote.
Right. It's so important this in this election for your listeners, for all voters, to be so attuned to what their candidates stand for at the local, state, and federal level, especially in this area of democracy. And of course, there are lots of candidates running who still are spreading disinformation and are still essentially election denialists and are trying to sow distrust in the election. And Wisconsin runs very good elections. Yes. And the processes are very clear on what needs to happen. And the certification processes can be trusted. And that's one thing I hope that Wisconsinites really take away from all of this and from your coverage is that they should vote and their vote will be counted as cast. And the system is generally very trustworthy. And the chances of any sort of widespread voter fraud is very small. But they really do need to be attuned to what candidates say about the process and hopefully take that into account one way or the other when they cast their votes. And you're right that there are more and more local and state officials, especially on election boards, who have some role in the certification process, that are perhaps election denialists. And that's not a good thing. And we also saw, I'm sure you've talked about this, what happened in Georgia, where some hardcore Republicans were elected to the state election board and now control it and have been passing rule after rule after rule to make it harder for the certification process to go forward, to really reflect the will of the people. And the state courts are having to intervene now. And even the Republican Secretary of State there disagrees with those rules changes. I mean, so these are the sort of things that everybody needs to stay really attuned to. And hopefully between all of us really staying attuned, really demanding the right things from our officials, hopefully with the courts intervening when it needed, when they need to, the system will hold up.
Yeah, that is, it's sort of our best bet is in one, respecting the institutions, respecting the processes, standing for the rule of law, and supporting candidates as voters that stand by the rule of law. Folks, my special guest this half hour for this Monday check-in with the Center for American Progress Action Fund is their Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy, Mike Sozin. You have worked in many crucial roles, both as a direct advisor to elected officials, but also as a subject matter expert within the executive branch departments. One of the things that I often try to share with everybody that's listening, all of you out there, is I've worked in government for a long time, and by far the overwhelming approach from virtually every single person I ever encountered in government were people there just trying to do their jobs well, to do it objectively. It was very unusual that I saw someone bringing a personal political agenda to jobs that were civil servant based jobs and were needed those jobs to be done objectively and independently and without favor or fear. Is that your experience as well? Can you just speak to that a little bit, Mike? Because I feel like there's such government employees get such a bad rap and we're assumed to all be these highly partisan actors. And it's like, that was the opposite of my experience entirely. And I clerked for a federal appeals court judge who was a two-time Reagan appointee. We never talked about it.
Right. You hit the nail on the head. I worked in both, for the Department of Justice and for the Federal Communications Commission, which is a truly independent agency. And the civil servants at both of those places are so dedicated to just doing the right thing. I mean, as a civil servant working for the federal government, you actually have to take an oath to uphold the law and the Constitution when you start your job, and people take great pride in it. Sure. Civil servants might have political leanings one way or the other. I mean, they're people just like you and me, just like we all are. We have political leanings, but we have to put those aside when we do our jobs, which is to help implement and make sure that the law is implemented in a neutral way that keeps Americans safe protected, whatever the civil servant's job is. And that's one thing that really worries me, is that when we have a political candidate and a Project 2025 that are going to try to weaken the independence of agencies and are going to try to clear out the civil servants and replace them with political loyalists, that's really dangerous, because our civil service is based on this notion that these dedicated career people, who are actually in many times could make a lot more money in the private sector, are just trying to do the right thing for the public interest.
Yeah, it's up and down sort of federal employment ranks, right? It's not just, they're not just talking about replacing people arguably that have leadership roles that maybe should have a reflection of a president's policy agenda as a partisan. They're not talking about that. The proposal in Project 2025 is getting down to levels of governmental service workers that are protected civil servants and just removing the civil service protections. And I will tell everybody that's listening, and Mike, I'll ask you to chime in too. I have seen partisans in roles that were explicitly partisan roles through the appointment process. They have limited usefulness, and in fact, I don't think are particularly helpful in getting the nuts and bolts of government functioning done. That's why they're not political appointees fireable at will by the elected chief executive. You need people that aren't subject to the whims of an elected official to ensure the continuity of government. And of course, we should always be looking at efficiency and improving accountability. But the solution is not a bunch of political hacks. It's sort of antithetical to the objective that I think we all wish to see more of.
That's right. That's why I think the average American should be and is alarmed when they learn about this sort of tactic, because it really goes against our American values, at least in recent decades, as the civil service has been improved and strengthened. And yeah, look, we all agree that no matter whether they're a Republican or a Democrat, get a certain number of slots that they can fill in all of the agencies under the administration's control. Not in the truly independent agencies, but at the Department of Justice, for example. Of course, a president should be able to have some political appointees there, and those political appointees can help steer the general ship in terms of implementing a president's agenda. But you're right that the civil servants are there. They're the ones with deep expertise. They help to advise the politicals on what can and can't be done. And they're there to make sure that the public interest is being acted in. And luckily, they're there as guardrails. And that's actually good for the American people.
Folks, that's Mike Sozan. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I want us to take a listen to this, Mike, because J.D. Vance finally told us what we all knew his viewpoint about certifying the electors back on January 6th, what he would have done had he been in the position of Mike Pence. Let's take a listen, Kel. This is Cut 7.
He was asked to not certify it.
Sure.
So would you have certified it last year for the third?
Again, I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors and let the country have the debate about what actually matters and what kind of an election that we have.
So you wouldn't have certified states. To be clear,
I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates.
I think that's
what I would have done. Again, I've said that publicly many times.
So shocking. My special guest, Mike Sozan, Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to dig into that clip when we come back, Mike. Because it's for all the marbles, folks. Democracy matters. Your vote is what helps protect it. More here on The Maggie Dawn Show after these brief messages on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Kamala Harris gets that everyday costs are too high. She has real plans to tackle price gouging, cut taxes for middle-class families, and make life more affordable. Her opponent's plan?
Donald Trump plans to impose what is, in effect, a national sales tax on everyday products. It will mean higher prices on just about every one of your daily needs. A Trump tax on gas, a Trump tax on food, a Trump tax on clothing, a Trump tax on over-the-counter medication. Donald Trump's plan would cost a typical family $3,900 a year. When everyday prices are too high, he will make them even higher.
Kamala Harris. A better plan for lowering costs for a future we can afford. Paid for by FFPAC, FFPAC.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. FFPAC's responsible for the content of this advertising.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number two ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Every Monday at 2:30, I'm joined by a big thinker, a friend of the show and now a friend of yours from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today is no exception. Joined by Mike Sozan. He is the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy. He's been Chief of Staff to a senator, a legislative director for a different senator, counsel to another senator. He's worked at the DOJ and the FCC. He is an expert on democracy, and the stakes are certainly high for our democracy in this very next election. Early voting starts tomorrow. Thank goodness. I cannot wait to get my ballot cast. Want to get it done with, Mike, because I just want to know it is in the bag. I will be voting tomorrow myself. But before the break, and we're going to play it again, I played for everybody, for each and every one of you, and for you as well, Mike. J.D. Vance, just about a week and a half ago, finally getting pressed for a clear answer on what he would have done on January 6th. And his answer is, I would have violated my constitutional oath and refused to certify the slate of electors. Calvin, let's take a listen one last time.
He was asked to not certify it.
Sure.
So would you have certified? I'll ask you for the third.
Again, I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors and let the country have the debate about what actually matters and what kind of an election that we have.
So you wouldn't have certified states. To be clear.
I would have asked the states to submit alternative slates of electors. That's what I would have done. Again, I've said that publicly many times.
Mike, there's so much in there. It's such a short clip, and yet there's so much in there that's just stunning. Your reactions.
It is stunning, and it's emblematic of why our nation is in this troubling political chapter we're in right now. I mean, we are a nation that is supposed to have commonly held values, accountability to the rule of law, and political norms that are meant to get us through a lot of tough situations, but really bind us together and keep our republic going. And here you have a candidate for vice president and a sitting senator really breaking a major, major norm and the Constitution. But this is the peaceful transfer of presidential power that's always happened in our nation's history, 250 years. This was the first time, January 6th, 4 years ago almost, where a one of the presidential candidates tried to block that peaceful transfer of power. And it is shocking. It really should be unacceptable to us all. I mean, you remember there was actually back in 2000 when during the Bush versus Gore race, when Gore really, you know, he ended up having the Supreme Court of the United States decide the election and hand it to George W. Bush. Al Gore was the sitting vice president at the time and had to preside over the electoral count, basically the January 6th of that year. I can't remember which date it was.
Yeah, nor can I, but yes, but he had to do that job. Yeah,
he had to do it, and he handed over power to the Republicans because that was just the political norm. It's what the Constitution called. It's what the Constitution called for, and it was the right thing to do. It reflected the will of the American people as determined in part by the Supreme Court. So the fact that we are so far removed from that now, and that we have a major candidate just proudly saying that he would ignore that, the will of the people, is again emblematic of why we're in this really tough situation. And hopefully we're going to turn the page on this tough situation soon.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I just, in response to some of the things that Senator Vance said in that clip, let's be clear, everyone. While it certainly has the veneer of reasonability to say, oh, well, let's have a discussion about what's really important in elections. Yeah, JD, you have that before people vote. That's called the campaigning period. And then you count all the votes and they need to count. And that is the outcome. That is the discussion. It is in the voting. Just the rhetoric and the sort of normalizing, or the sane washing, if you will, another buzzword of our time, is shocking. I want to just respond to a couple quick questions we've gotten on the text line. Michaela from West Bend asked, what action can or should someone take if an employer denies them the time off to vote? Here in the state of Wisconsin, your employer is required to give you up to 3 hours to vote on election day. 3 hours. No matter the size of the employer, you get 3 hours to go vote if you want to do that on election day. If you don't live in the state of Wisconsin and you're wondering, you can call up your local boards of elections. It's usually a quick Google away. So anybody, if you've got a question about that, go check it out. But of course, make a plan to vote when you don't have to be at work. Vote early if you can. Get it taken care of. Mike, as we're coming up on the end of our time together, what are some of the things? I mean, Donald Trump's rhetoric, I hate repeating it, right? Calling for the military to be dispatched on his political enemies, calling out the Pelosi's by name, Adam Schiff, falsely claiming that CBS had given the vice president the questions ahead of the debate, calling for their FCC license to be yanked, all of which totally untrue. Talking about the enemy within, most recently doubling down on those comments a number of times. What do you want Wisconsin voters to know? Talk to each of the people listening out there today.
Yeah, Maggie, you did a really good job setting out just some of the more recent things that Donald Trump has said. And what I would just say to Wisconsinites is really just do your homework. Check your own values and your own value system. And I think most people are supportive of a true democracy, not supportive of authoritarianism. We all want to get to be able to get along as a community, to be able to solve problems in a civil way through the ballot box, reject political violence, and support candidates who you think are best aligned with those sorts of American values.
Thanks so much, Mike Sozin, the Senior Fellow for Democracy Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thank you for your service as a public servant to each and every one of us and democracy. Maggie and the Millionaires is coming up next. I've got George Gala joining me, the founder of Additional Worker Advocacy Group. Don't miss it here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Travel Wisconsin's Logan Rogie, who joins the show to discuss fall hotspots in our beautiful state. And we'll go back to the future with a discussion about Back to the Future.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Carl Sarecki from Door County Trolley. Have you ever lost anybody on one of the tours?
The question really isn't did you lose people or did you gain them? True story, one of our drivers.
So he gets home, picked up a spirit along the tour.
Yeah, he's in bed, and then all of a sudden the treadmill starts up on him.
See, if I were a ghost, I think I would just get liposuction. I don't think I would mess around with cardio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.